Radio Cité Genève.
Émission Entre les âges.
Bienvenue dans l'émission Entre les âges, émission présentée par François-Xavier Poisat sur Radio Cité Genève, une émission qui parle de musique classique, mais pas que, comme aujourd'hui, on accueille un invité qui ne fait pas que de la musique classique, ou alors qu'il la compose d'une façon très moderne, très accessible. C'est un grand honneur aujourd'hui d'accueillir Daniel Schnieder, qui est un des compositeurs les plus joués dans le monde. Il est suisse d'origine, américain d'adoption. Daniel Schnieder, bonjour.
Bonjour.
Et happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
C'est votre anniversaire aujourd'hui. Quel honneur de venir nous voir le jour de votre anniversaire. Alors, quoi de plus logique pour découvrir un peu votre style, votre musique, que de faire déjà écouter une de vos compositions? Est-ce que vous voulez la présenter? Est-ce une composition ou un arrangement ou une recomposition de I've Got Rhythm de Gershwin? How would you introduce that music?
There is actually two parts. The first part is I've Got Rhythm, and the second part is the Cuban Ouverture, and I mix the two of them together, and it's a combination of a modern classical ensemble. In this case, on the recording, you hear the Absolute Ensemble of Christian Järvi in New York. And then in the first part, I combine it, actually in both parts, I combine it with a rhythm section and a piano player. And the piano player is the late, great Kenny Drew Jr. That is a fantastic jazz player, but he also knows how to read music very well and play classical music. So I wrote this arrangement for him of I've Got Rhythm, and I had the possibility to look at the manuscript of Gershwin and go from there, which is all written, handwritten music, and I was trying to figure it out, what he actually meant. And most of the I've Got Rhythm arrangements that are out there are a little bit, a little bit too much Hollywood post-romantic in my opinion. And I tried to do the opposite. I went all the way into the jazz thing, where I also inserted sections that are improvised, you know, there's sections that are not written out. So Kenny has to switch between the written out sections, the original sections that Gershwin wrote, and the improvised sections. And I reorchestrated and rearranged the whole thing in a more modern way, which is not, late romantic orchestration, which is more like a, let's say, a modern ensemble orchestration. And then there's a second part, which is the Cuban Ouverture. Kenny plays there too, but Paquito Rivera is actually playing the lead line. Paquito is one of the most famous Cuban musicians, a saxophone player and clarinet player I had the pleasure to work with, and he's sat in and played the solo in the Cuban Ouverture, which is quite a unique opportunity to bring all these people together.
Eh bien, voilà de quoi avoir une idée assez précise de votre univers musical et de New York, hein, puisque tout ça se passe à New York, la ville dans laquelle vous habitez. On écoute tout de suite votre arrangement de I've Got Rhythm avec des mélodies, comme vous avez dit, de l'ouverture cubaine de George Gershwin, interprétée par Kenny Drew avec l'Absolute Ensemble.
Radio Cité Genève.
Thank you.
C'était un arrangement de I've Got Rhythm, célèbre chanson de George Gershwin, arrangé par Daniel Schneider, grand compositeur, qui est notre invité d'aujourd'hui. Daniel Schneider, alors comment est-ce qu'un Zurichois comme vous devient une star aux États-Unis? Comment est-ce qu'un Suisse devient un géant du jazz, un pont entre la musique classique et d'autres styles plus populaires? Est-ce que vous voulez nous présenter votre parcours?
Oui, j'étais toujours fasciné par la musique de jazz. Ok, I switch to English. it was something that I really wanted to do. I had a certain type of music in my head, and then I tried to realize it in Switzerland. And yes, I was able to do some things, but I never got to the results that I really had in my mind. So I went finally to Munich first, and then from Munich with the record label, I went over to New York. And I tried to stay there for 1 year, 2 years, and then it was 3 years and 4 years, 5 years, and then stayed there up to now, because I had the chance to work with jazz musicians together, classical musicians. I wrote an opera about Charlie Parker, which was played about 14 times in different cities in the United States. And I had the opportunity to work together with great jazz artists like Lee Konitz or Abdullah Ibrahim. And I was just able to combine the two worlds the way I wanted. And in the very beginning in Zurich, I didn't know how to go about that. And eventually, when I went over to New York, all these different pieces of my musical thoughts and ideas came together, and I was able to come up with my own music. And I'm very grateful that I had the chance to do so.
Comme beaucoup de grands musiciens de jazz, vous jouez de plusieurs instruments. Alors, je vous ai déjà entendu au violoncelle, à la flûte, mais votre instrument principal, ça reste quand même le saxophone.
Oui. This is the saxophone is actually my main instrument. I play the most concerts on the saxophone, but I play also some concerts with the flute. And as a kid, I started out playing the cello. And I love the piano. As you know, I can't really play concerts on the piano, but I love to play the piano and figure things out and for that instrument. So this is basically my background, and it helped me a lot that I started out on the cello, since you understand string instruments and you have to have a certain discipline to play a string instrument. And I tried to play jazz on the cello, but I failed. I couldn't really do it. And then I switched to the saxophone, which is much more, let's say, at the center of jazz music and improvisation. And I took it from there.
Yeah. Et vous nous proposez maintenant de découvrir ou de redécouvrir un grand saxophoniste, Stan Getz. Est-ce que c'est une inspiration pour vous?
Most definitely, yes. I really loved the sound of Stan Getz when I was 15, 16. The sound is kind of mellow and not as, let's say, harsh or intense as John Coltrane. I love John Coltrane, but when I was 15, I came out of listening to the music of Coleman Hawkins and Ben Webster, the great jazz players from the 30s and the 40s. Tenor saxophone player, I played tenor saxophone. Or still play tenor saxophone and soprano a lot. But at that time, I didn't play soprano. And then Stan Getz was a big influence because he combined in my ear aesthetics of classical music and jazz. Mm. And his sound is also very close to the cello sound. Mm. Yeah.
Alors, écoutons donc ce saxophoniste très classique, un saxophoniste de jazz, Stan Getz, qui interprète un morceau de jazz, un standard qui s'appelle Her, ça veut dire elle en français, E2LE. Voilà un nom de morceau typique pour le jazz. On écoute Stan Getz.
Radio Cité Genève. Thank you.
C'était Her, arrangé et interprété par Stan Getz, grand saxophoniste de jazz aux sonorités très classiques. Un extrait choisi par Daniel Schneider, compositeur suisse et américain, qui est notre invité d'aujourd'hui. Daniel Schneider, revenons à votre musique. Une fois, vous m'avez dit quelque chose qui m'a marqué. Il est difficile d'être un compositeur parce que si vous composez votre sixième symphonie, vous avez beau avoir cinq symphonies d'expérience, c'est toujours aussi difficile que d'écrire la première symphonie. Alors qu'un interprète, lui, a une certaine routine qu'il peut mettre en place et qui accélère l'apprentissage des morceaux au fur et à mesure qu'il gagne en expérience. Quel est votre processus de création? Comment est-ce que vous composez de la musique?
Yes, it's very interesting because you have always to start from the very beginning again. I mean, you have to practice. To compose is like practicing an instrument. You have to practice it. But on the other hand, you have to be open to new ideas. Otherwise, you always write the same piece again. You know, like if you have a piece and you're really in the middle of that piece, and then you have to kind of forget about it so that you can write the next symphony. But you see that you're not 100% successful, but that's called style, you know. Then finally you develop a style and you can hear, okay, that must be Beethoven, that must be Mahler. But the danger is also that you always write the same piece. It can happen. It also happened in some ways to Bruckner and also Mahler's 6th and 7th symphony. There are parts that are really almost the same. And which is not bad, you know. It's a very natural thing that you actually express yourself in the same way. But it's a process of going about a new piece like a little kid, starting from the very beginning. On the other hand, you have all the skills and the knowledge from the music before, but some of the content of the music before you have to forget in order to be open to write a new piece. It's an interesting process.
And what you, quelle est votre façon préférée d'inventer les mélodies, les harmonies, les rythmes? Vous les entendez, vous les transcrivez? Ça vient un peu du ciel, comme ça vient au réveil?
Oui, parfois j'ai des idées rythmiques ou des idées une mélodie par exemple, and then I have to find out what is that, what I'm actually doing? And then sometimes I find out, hey, this is not 4-4, this is not 3-4, there's something missing or something. And then that's in a whole other process of abstraction to actually bring it down on a piece of paper so that the people can you know, read what read your thoughts, because there might be a time when I'm no more there and cannot explain it. So this process is of abstraction. Bringing the music down as a piece of paper is needs a lot of skills to express yourself clearly, so that if you play it or somebody else in Alaska is playing or some other guy is playing it in Australia, that they sound about the same, that the information on the paper is sufficient to play my music or not, whatever. And that's that needs a lot of skills and experience. That's where the experience is coming in. But on the other hand, you have to be like a little kid, you know, playing with your toys and just enjoying, really inventing new stuff. Because otherwise it becomes a routine, and then you start to sound a little bit predictable. You know, oh, here he goes again. Oh, this is, I know. Oh, but that happens anyway. But it should be always full of surprise, like the music of Beethoven or Mozart. It's always full of surprises, where they surprise themselves, you know, little things that are, oops, what was that? You know.
Eh bien, laissons-nous surprendre avec... Une de vos compositions hein, que vous nous proposez aujourd'hui, c'est Rossini's Visit to Beethoven, donc la visite de Rossini à Beethoven, interprétée par un quatuor de trombone, le Trombone Unit Hanover. On écoute tout de suite, c'est de Daniel Schneider.
Radio Cité Genève. Thank you.
C'était de Daniel Schneider, notre invité d'aujourd'hui, un compositeur suisse et américain, Rossini's Visit to Beethoven, interprété par le Trombone Unit Hanover, un quatuor de trombone. Donc, comme je viens de le dire, vous êtes suisse et vous êtes devenu américain aussi. Les États-Unis, c'est un pays qui nous fait rêver à nous, Européens, et qui réveille en nous, à la fois, j'ai l'impression, un sentiment d'infériorité et parfois de supériorité. C'est en tout cas un pays qui nous fascine. Comment est-ce que vous avez vécu les États-Unis? Est-ce que c'était une chose naturelle pour vous que de devenir américain?
This is really a little bit of a difficult question because, you know, there are some parts of me that are really Swiss and remain 100% Swiss, and there are American things that I cannot share because I didn't grow up there. My kids grew up in the United States, so they're very attached in a different way to American culture than I am. Since I grew up in Switzerland, but on the other hand, professionally, the fascinating thing is it's a huge country with a lot of opportunities. I mentioned that before, like the opera, you know, gets played in Philadelphia, in New York, in Chicago, in Atlanta, in Madison, Wisconsin, in Phoenix, and so. And you can't do that in Switzerland. You know, if you're in Switzerland, you do your thing, and sometimes they give you a chance to do your thing, and they do it once, and that's it. And then you have to actually go into another country. And how I experienced it also with Germany or some other countries, that you have to bring also your own money if you want to realize something in the outside, because they're saying, okay, you're coming from Switzerland, you come from a very rich country, so, you know, they perceive you as being rich, and then you're sometimes not as supported as if you come from the United States, where they know, okay, he's coming from New York, so we really have to pay him some serious money, otherwise he's not coming. I mean, this is now a business aspect, but it for me it was kind of important to grow and to do things that are really international. So that the music gets played in all kinds of countries, from Australia to Europe, Asia. And that really happened. And I think that only happened because I went to the United States. And from there, the United States, they export culture, you know, popular culture, jazz or rock and pop music, but also different things like chewing gums and Coca-Cola, which is also part of culture, and they export that. And we in Switzerland, we import it more. You see that in music festivals, and so we bring in bands, we bring in artists from the outside, and what we export is watches and cheese. And that's fine. I mean, I don't want to put that down, you know. I think it's great what Switzerland can do. But if you're in the arts, you have to see that you have also one leg outside of Switzerland in order to have a career that for 20 or 30 or 40 years where you can actually survive with just playing your music and writing your music.
Eh bien, écoutons maintenant une célèbre chanson d'un chanteur qui a justement été exporté dans le monde entier, un chanteur au cœur de la culture américaine, c'est Elvis Presley, The King, et vous nous proposez maintenant un de ses plus grands hits, c'est In the Ghetto.
Radio Cité Genève.
As a snow flies on a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby child is born in the ghetto. And his mama cries. But if there's one thing that she don't need, it's another hungry mouth to feed in the ghetto. Now people, don't you understand? The child needs a helping hand. He'll grow to be an angry young man someday. And take a look at you and me. Are we too blind to see? Or do we simply turn our heads and look the other way? Well, the world.
hungry little boy with the runny nose plays in the street as a cold wind blows in the ghetto. And his hunger burns. So he starts to roam the streets at night, and he learns how to steal, and he learns how to fight in the ghetto. Then one night in desperation, the young man breaks away. He buys a gun, he steals a car, he tries to run, but he don't get far, and his mama cries. As a crowd gathers round, an angry young man face down in the street with a gun in his hand in the ghetto. And another young man dies. In a cold and gray Chicago morning, another little baby child is born in the ghetto. And his mama cries.
C'est un des grands classiques de la musique pop américaine, In the Ghetto, du King Elvis Presley. Une chanson qui nous est proposée par notre invité d'aujourd'hui, Daniel Schneider, compositeur suisse-américain d'adoption et qui fait de ce genre de musique des inspirations pour ses compositions à lui. Alors je viens de dire que c'était un grand classique de la chanson, et vous-même, vous êtes un compositeur de musique classique, le même mot mais pour dire deux choses différentes. Quel est selon vous l'avenir de la musique classique ? Parce que c'est avant tout des gens comme vous qui continuent à composer des morceaux classiques.
Yes, I think we have to move a little bit out of the ivory tower and the Eurocentric vision of classical music. And this is at the moment not yet happening in Europe. And I think the younger generation wants to do it, but they... With academia, there are lots of problems because they say, okay, jazz and popular music is something completely different, and we do classical music and so on. So, and I would say a guy like Mozart or even Beethoven would not understand what they're talking about. They said, okay, that's street music, but I'm using also some of the street music for my music. And that's actually what has to happen again, you know, that we fuse on a very high level, I mean, a very skillful level. I'm not talking about dumping down and doing a very uninteresting, simple music. I'm talking about doing really complicated music, but... infusing classical music with elements from the outside, from Latin American music, jazz music, or Indian music, or whatever, Chinese music, because we are in classical music has to reflect the world we're living in, what we're actually experiencing. And if now we are in Paris, and this is no more just French people, it's people from all over the world that live here and they play music here. And the concert hall, the classical concert hall, is reflected by a couple of white guys. Most of them are dead for 200 years. And this is not a sustainable situation. The music of the future has to reflect our urban culture, which is multicultural and has influences from all over the world. And my music tries to do that, and it's not something that I want to do. It's something that just comes very naturally to me, since I'm also a jazz musician, and I'm listening to Arab musicians. I'm fascinated by that. I'm listening to a pipa, and then I wrote the pipa concerto, which is a Chinese instrument. And I think that represents our culture right now. We have to bring that into the concert hall, and then we also create a new audience, and the whole problem of classical music being marginalized, only, you know, like 1% listening to classical music, that problem will be solved, I think. That's what I think.
Ça me donne envie de vous poser cette question un peu provocatrice, du coup. Est-ce que la mondialisation va être un des éléments qui permettra à la musique classique de survivre, de continuer à évoluer?
Yes, definitely. I mean, you saw that. What's the music that's the most popular? We played some of that music already. Gershwin, you know, like Concerto in F or Rhapsody in Blue, or Borky and Bess. This music was very, very successful in the beginning of the century, last century. Why? Because it fused the different elements. If you look at the music of Ravel, why is Ravel so successful, one of the most successful composers, if not the most successful one in the 20th century? Because he was able to fuse different elements, and Arab music or Maghreb music, Spanish music with French music, with jazz elements from this piano concerto for left hand alone is actually, you know, it's kind of a jazz concert. Mm. And that music proved to be very successful, and the music, which is very abstract and also interesting and developed a lot of different sounds and new approaches to music, if that's isolated and not combined with the experience of the street and the experience of the multicultural process, then it isolates the classical musicians and the classical music and doesn't bring it forward. And then maybe one guy finds out something really interesting, like, you know, 12 the most music. I like that. I'm into that. But if you isolate that and you build a school out of it, and you have the pupil of the pupil of the pupil that writes the same, more or less the same music, it is not interesting, and people don't want to play it, and people don't want to hear it. And we have this situation right now that academia is focused, my opinion, on the completely wrong issues, you know, the wrong topics. Mm. They should actually be much wider and see, okay, now we have jazz influences, we have Latin American influence, Cuban influences, we have Arab music influences. Okay, let's invite these people and teach what they do, and then look at the whole thing, not with Adorno type of approach of saying, oh, these people are inferior to our European great music that we invented, and this is kind of primitive, it's interesting, but, you know, we call it ethnic music or something like that. This is not modern thinking. This is 19th century thinking, condescending. The Americans say condescending. Okay, these guys, oh, jazz, that's a jazz musician. And that's kind of self-destructive for classical music.
Et pourtant, dans le 19e siècle, ou même le 18e, on a quand même des compositeurs comme Mozart, Schubert, Beethoven, qui, de temps en temps, mettent quand même un peu d'ethnomusicologie dans leur musique, utilisent parfois quand même des thèmes populaires. Alors, ça allait peut-être moins loin, parce qu'ils n'avaient pas la possibilité de prendre l'avion, de découvrir des cultures complètement différentes, mais l'esprit d'ouverture était quand même déjà là.
Certainement, aussi Bach, ça rembourse, ça c'est une danse, une danse espagnole.
Oui, oui.
This is exactly the problem that we always think, okay, the classical musicians, they were so pure, like Bach and Handel. This is not true. They actually used all the influences were exposed to. Yeah. There was no radio there and so on. Yeah. But when actually Bach wrote an Italian concerto, he wrote it because he heard the Italians play this kind of music and absorbed it into his music and actually even called it Italian concert. You know, the Italians were at that time probably the jazz musicians, you know. But he listened to it and thought, okay, wait a minute, I can do that too. And this kind of spirit has to come back into classical music, and then I'm sure we save it for future generations. Right. But if we just keep playing the same 10 tunes over and over and over again, it will not die, but it will not grow.
et un autre compositeur comme Ravel ou Gershwin, que vous avez cité, qui était beaucoup dans cette ouverture et qui a fait énormément de recherches ethnologiques pour nourrir sa musique, c'est le Hongrois Gyorgy Ligeti. Et vous nous proposez un morceau très sympathique qui s'appelle Hungarian Rock, le rock hongrois, interprété par Anthony Romaniuk au clavecin.
Radio Cité Genève.
Thank you.
C'était Hungarian Rock, interprété par Anthony Romagnuc au clavecin, un morceau de Gheorghe Ligeti, un collègue compositeur de notre invité d'aujourd'hui, Daniel Schneider. Alors, Daniel Schneider, vous êtes peut-être un Beethoven des temps modernes, mais vous n'échapperez pas à la question qui tue. Beethoven composé il y a 200 ans à peu près. Et aujourd'hui, on joue encore sa musique. Est-ce que vous pensez qu'on jouera encore votre musique en l'an 2200?
Well, you know, I don't know that. And it's not really in my mind. You know, I just want to do the best I can and the most fun I can. For, and the most challenging, too. You know, this is the things. I mean, I can write some music, which is fun that we can just sit down and play it. But I also want to push the envelope, you know, like... Try to do things that are new for, and challenging for the musicians, but that translate to the audience too. I mean, to an audience that sits down and is interested in listening to a classical concert. And I have to say, for me, I'm coming back right now from Germany and Berlin, and so where Simon Hörfele, a very young German trumpeter, is 26, played my trumpet concerto. And then I had Arkady Schildkloppel playing my Opern concerto. And then Christophe Croiset, our friend, was playing my cello concerto three times, and they're all like, no, Arcadi is my age, but all the other musicians like you, François, you're much younger than me, and that fills me with a lot of joy. You know, that it's not just me and that the music dying after I wrote it down and played it with Kenny Drew that we heard in the beginning, or with David Taylor, fantastic trombone player, or Lou Soloff, who already died. This is kind of sad, you know, if you feel like, ooh, this music is dying with the people that actually played it. But for me, this is the greatest feeling to see that one or two generation younger people are picking it up, and they play it very well. They actually, sometimes they even play better than we could play it in the very beginning. And also the publications are coming out, the music gets printed, and yes, I guess that in 200 years there will be people that will be interested in what was going on at that time. And if I can be a part of the history, I'm very grateful. But it's not the reason why I'm writing it. You know, I'm not writing it to be a part of history. I'm writing the music actually to have fun myself playing it. A lot of it I wrote for myself, and also to give joy to the audience and the other musicians who are trying it, to play it and create a record. You know, like that means like you do something and then somebody else does something. It's a history of creating music that has to go on. If that breaks down and people don't play new music anymore, then it's like a tree not growing anymore and eventually dies, you know.
Eh bien, retrouvons cette joie avec le dernier extrait pour aujourd'hui. C'est à nouveau une de vos compositions, Beethoven in Manhattan, peut-être un titre autobiographique. Merci beaucoup, Daniel Schneider.
It's about the young Beethoven. The young Beethoven. I wrote that in the Beethoven year, and it's about the young Beethoven going to Manhattan, but the real Manhattan of today. Oui. And he's starting with his own thoughts, and then more you hear the influences of the new city and the new world. That's what we were talking about. Merging.
Le choc culture. Des civilisations.
Yeah, exactement.
Alors merci d'avoir été notre invité. En plus, le jour de votre anniversaire, Daniel Schneider, compositeur suisse-américain. C'était l'émission Entre les âges, présentée par François-Xavier Poisa, avec l'invité Daniel Schneider. Merci aux auditeurs d'avoir été avec nous. Merci à Olivier Steinmetz pour la production, et à bientôt sur
merci,
Radio
François.
Cité Genève. Au revoir.
Radio Cité Genève. Thank you.
émission Entre les âges.